Welcome to the Botcast, featuring Nigel Bottrell. The Botcast is an Entrepreneur's Circle production, exclusively for EC members.
Well, hey, Botcast time! Goodness me, the crocuses are blooming. The daffodils are out. Spring must be here.
I think the daffodils have been out since December, haven't
they? It's the Botcast, it's Nigel here, and with me this week, I have the EC's resident gardening experts.
Yes.
And
how to prune your business.
There we go. Oh, nice, nice. Martin Norbury is here. Afternoon, Martin.
Good afternoon, everybody. Good afternoon, Nigel.
Are you very well?
Yeah, I'm very good, actually.
Is your year going well?
It is. It is going well because, like you, I've got quite a bit of clarity in what I'm trying to do.
Clarity, there you see. Look at that. In the first minute of the podcast.
I know a lot of people will say, oh, God, not that word again. But when you have the clarity and you know which direction you're going, when you get to a junction and you don't know whether to go left or right, only way you know which way to go is to know your ultimate destination.
That's very true. I think, although what tends to happen is, we don't get to junctions, do we, as such?
No.
Well, what we do is we whiz past forks in the road.
All that shit, they just arrive suddenly on us as yes. Bloody roadblocks or something. So, yeah. But that's the thing. When you have a decision to make, the only way you can make a decision is to know which direction you're going in. So that's why. So for us, you know, based on where we are already this year, we're in a good position because we knew where we were going.
And you can tell we're not recording this podcast on a Friday.
No, definitely not.
Because Martin doesn't work Fridays.
No, I don't. Even though when you talked to my wife last year, she said, well, hang on a minute, you don't work Fridays. We work bloody Saturdays and Sundays, don't you? Which is no longer true because, as a lot of people know, I don't work Fridays because I spend time with my twins. And this is the last year that they're at home with us a lot of the time because they're off to big school or they're off to school.
I was going
to
say, you see, we have a different... I've used that phrase because that's because mine are off to university, which is a little bit further down the line.
We started a bit late, had a good, great life, and now it's over, obviously. So they start their school in September. So this year is about actually spending a bit more time with them. So, yeah, I don't work Fridays, and that's a good thing to maybe have a little plug, if that's the right, Nigel.
Of course it is.
So
I feel like Graham Norton.
I know.
I feel like you've come on my podcast just to plug your book.
Yeah, there's a line of people outside who've got other stuff to do. Unfortunately, I'm not sat with any other major celebs. But this year was a real proud moment because that UPS box arrived end of January, and inside it was... books, and the books were I Don't Work Friday, so it was my official first novel. Novel?
It's not a novel, is it? No,
it's new, which is novel, but
okay.
It's my official book. But basically, it was such a... I remember you saying at the time that when you first see and hold the book...
Oh, yeah.
It's just an unbelievable feeling. Yeah. And I unfortunately did it on video because our publisher said, capture the video.
Oh, the opening of the box.
Open the book. And it actually had to swallow. Because it was quite emotional.
An emotional moment.
Oh, wow, yeah. And then it was like, oh, have we actually got it right? It's all those fears suddenly come wandering through. But yeah, the feedback has been phenomenal.
Well, it is an excellent book.
And it is, yeah.
Where is it available yet on Amazon?
Yeah, on Amazon. Yeah, on Amazon, hardback, Kindle and paperback.
Ooh.
And we're just talking to people about putting it on Audible as well.
Nice.
So, yeah. Because it's generally it's going to be a 90-minute, two-hour read max.
Yes.
So a good train journey, a good flight, that type of thing. It's not a instructional manual. It's meant to be a book that you read, you go, oh, and then you reread, and then yes. You hand it to someone that you want to read as well.
Yeah, I mean, in many ways, it's a much better book than anything I've ever written, but the way you've done it is not dissimilar to Botty's Rules because you've told your story
absolutely
and woven the
yes.
the kind of key threads into the key kind of learning points or you know incidents and
yeah absolutely and the premise behind it is there's a lot of people that have got so much natural ability of what they do but they just don't realise it
yeah.
and I was challenged with that a lot of times by different people saying that you know how to structure businesses and grow businesses. But it seems second nature because I've been doing it for so long. So this was all about not making it second nature and making it deliberate. And like you say, your daily disciplines is what some of the things that has guided your business's success.
No question.
And this was all about becoming disciplined at doing certain things.
But it is equally, I mean, it is something that you are particularly good at. I mean, it's why it's why you're part of the Entrepreneur Circle team now.
Yes.
Because you bring, you and I are a little bit yin and yang.
Very much.
Okay, I thought a little bit, but okay,
I
can deal with very much.
In a good way.
No, but the rigors and the disciplines. I'm very good at self-discipline.
Yes.
If I have to do something, I will get it done.
Yeah.
I'm less good at, what's the word, imposing? I guess it probably is. But if I need my team or people to do things, and my expectations, well, I've told them now, why is it not happening?
Yes.
And of course, as the organisations kind of grow, it needs a bit more rigor than that, doesn't it? A little bit more process.
Yeah, it does. And what changed it for me, without a doubt, is going from being an entrepreneur, which is free flow, fun, energetic, dynamic, to when you get into the corporate world, whilst it can be the same, you've got a few tens or hundreds of people behind you that are waiting for you to determine what to do next. But more importantly, you've got these horrible little people called shareholders, in the nicest sense, and they can appoint you or take you away from your job. And legally, you have to do certain things at the right time, which means you have to get things done. You have to have that integrity, not just for yourself, but with other people.
Yeah,
that gives you the rigor to make sure you do all these
things. Actually, that is very true. I don't know, because one of my best jobs at Barclays, I was in my late 20s, and I got whisked off to London, and I spent 2 years as the PA to the chief exec.
Nice.
Which, well, it was a brilliant job, and he involved me in absolutely everything. I had an office next door to his. He had a secretary, and I was the PA to the chief exec at Barclays, and it was designed to kind of educate me, I guess, really. And he involved me from very early on. So for 18 months, I was part of all the group exec meetings, all things that went on, and I had this. It was an amazing role because I had no direct reports.
Mm-hmm.
No responsibilities.
No,
but I could get anything done anywhere in the organisation because
I
was able to. It was absolutely brilliant. But what was the most? And the thing, I mean, I learned so much in that 2 year time frame. But I think the most important or the most striking thing that I learned was it was all around. Obviously, PLCs had to publish results twice a year, half year and full year results. And there's a whole process around that in terms of stock exchange disclosures.
Absolutely.
And what can be said and who can see the numbers and knows what's happening, because obviously it affects all the share dealings and the share price. And then on the day itself, that's when the chief exec earns his money, on those 2 days a year, when they have to front up to all the investors.
When they can be sacked.
Absolutely, and all the media. And because the reason that there's a whole organisation that mobilises around basically prepping the CEO
for that day
and the whole results and the book that's put out and everything else for 2 days a year.
Yeah.
But that from that springs all the other rigour.
Yes.
So all the reports from within all the different divisions and all the different subdivisions all lead up to
because
these are the results and the dates that the results will be published are agreed, you know, 2 or 3 years in advance, so everyone knows that it's that day, and therefore it all counts back from that. So.
And the whole world is actually sat there waiting for those results.
Completely.
But of course, the analysts have already predicted those results.
Yes.
And if you're not in line with that,
exactly,
you are absolutely stuffed.
Yeah.
And the share price will tank. And the key thing, and this goes back to this wonderful book last year called Profit First, and I tell this story a lot, is the people, I always thought, because in a PLC environment, if you don't hit profit within a certain percentage, you have to do a profits warning, which the shareholders don't like at all, and you probably could lose your job. And you lose track of what businesses do. But to do a profits warning means you have to know where your profits are going to be, and you make sure you're not the CEO that has to do a profits warning. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, well, it's all about being predictable.
Absolutely,
isn't it? And that's one of the things. From big corporate life, where I mean, you and I have both worked and functioned in, albeit in different sectors, but we've kind of been in those large organisations, and it is one of the good things.
Oh, very much.
Is the rigour that comes from that, because as entrepreneurs, of course, we are released from we don't have the shackles of a reporting season, and it's fantastic. I don't have to account to anybody for my results, and that's a good thing. But I don't have to report to anybody for my results, and that's a bad thing as well.
Because sometimes we lose that personal integrity. Oh, we're going to hit this figure. Oh, we didn't quite do it, but next month we will.
I know, that's
not good.
I know, it's not.
That's not good at all.
And it's that characterises very much some of the challenges that I've had as with a kind of a growing team.
Yes.
And certainly part of my realisation and awakening over the last 12 or 18 months, really, of the need for me, because I think if I look back historically over the last, going back certainly beyond 18 months ago and backwards, I had lots of people around me who were like me.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, as you do start to grow a business, having people with different skills and
Absolutely.
Different focuses matters a lot. One of the areas that people look to get help and assistance to drive a business forward and deliver growth is by bonusing and incentivizing
Nice.
Their staff.
Yeah.
And we've had a number of conversations around the Mastermind table this year as people have sought to put in place bonus programs or incentive programs or commissions, etc., for their staff. And I thought it might be helpful just for us to talk for a few minutes around this. There's a very good piece in the March Entrepreneur Circular that Danielle Proctor has written.
Oh, right.
9 kind of key questions that you need to answer yourself that will help you construct a good kind of bonus or incentive program for your staff. And I'd just like to just share one or two learnings that I've had along the way and perhaps get your input on this as well, because it's, I mean, first of all, it can be a very crude tool, and done well, having the right bonus programs in place can make a big difference. It can really bring people with you. But more often than that happening, I think, is the other situation where schemes have been put in place that don't actually drive behaviour or results.
They can actually drive the opposite behaviour. That's the challenge with bonuses or incentives.
So let's just talk about that. I mean, the first thing I'd say is that nothing beats actually properly knowing and understanding your team.
Mm-hmm.
And when I look back at the biggest impact things that I've done over the years with my staff, I remember a particularly good one was about a year ago. I sent a bunch of my best of team that had done a really great job on a particular piece, and I got wind that Beyonce was playing at the NEC.
All right.
I have some I have a corporate kind of package there that I can get tickets for, so I got 6 hospitality tickets
Nice.
For Beyonce at the NEC, and I sent the 6 of them. And I told them about a month beforehand, and I mean, no one has ever had a better reception to an announcement when I told them all that they're all going to see Beyonce. I was hugged. There were screams.
Really?
Oh,
wow.
they were so excited. And
that's just from you, was it?
One of the team, the day after the concert, she handwrote me a letter, and delivered it to me, and in this letter, she said, "Yesterday was the best day of my life."
Wow.
And it wouldn't have worked for you. Now, the bang for buck.
Oh, you can't
believe
that.
If I put £200 in their pay packets,
nothing. Yeah.
The impact would have been trivial in comparison.
Yeah.
And I'd toy that, because it's not about, you don't have to put in the big money.
No.
I know I've had techies, I've talked to Keith Edmonds about this, who the winner of the Most Impressive Growth Award.
Yes.
You remember. An award that he's very, very proud of.
Well, he is.
Rightly so. But Keith's business relies on a strong technical team.
Mm-hmm.
And what he has found is, how he brings his techies in, you know, allowing them to get whatever keyboard they want, or specify their own computer that they want, which, again, marginal cost to him. I mean, he did say, I think he's got several kind of £150 keyboards in his office.
Right.
But in terms of what that means to the individual, because that's how they're minded, that's the right way to do it. And
that's
it's important that we understand that. I mean, everyone, I think, gets the premise that money's not everything.
No.
But understanding, well, what else is then? What actually matters? And I know one or two of our masterminders have actually sat down with their people and shared their clarity for the business this year.
Yes.
And then sought to understand better where their members of the team, what are they aspiring to do?
Yeah.
Where are they starting to head? And that can work very well. In the past, I've sent staff on, I've agreed, in that certainly one particular member of my team, it was a big deal. One year, he really wanted to take his family to Disney. So we sat down, worked out what would have to happen in the business for the business to basically pay for it.
Nice.
And that became his bonus, effectively, and that's what happened.
And because it's so important to him.
That's right, yeah.
He does everything he can to do that.
And of course, what happened is, when we agreed the thing, and I wrote the letter, was written out, if this happened, these things happen here, then that's what happened. They get the holiday book booked. And the next day, I got an email from his wife.
Nice.
Saying, oh my God, this is amazing, don't you worry, he'll have all the support he needs from me to get this thing happening. Well, as a business owner, that's what you want, isn't it?
Absolutely.
You know, when you start to get that happening at mobilize as well. So the there's more to bonus and incentive programs than perhaps might initially fit, you know, meet the eye.
I think so. I think a lot of people always go money. Mm-hmm. Always go money, but it's about the hearts and minds of what people really will do with that money is the key part. You know, the story I had, and it was my first ever employee, who, like most entrepreneurs, I was absolutely gutted when they left because I thought it's something I'd done wrong. It's a big learning curve, that one. But he was looking to save for a house with his girlfriend at the time. So every single penny we would put into his pay packet would go into the house. And he was a big surfer dude, a big ski boarding type
right,
person.
Yeah, yeah.
And
was he a gay on a tray or was he a skier?
He was definitely on the board, definitely okay. On the snowboard. And what he wanted to spend like 180 quid on a pair of Oakley sunglasses.
Yeah.
There's no way that Tiffany would have allowed him to do that.
Yes.
So I realised that and said, well, Chris, why don't I buy you the sunglasses as part of the bonus for 3 months for writing a training manual, which would have cost us like 10 grand over 3 months, and then invite you and Tiffany for lunch in Windsor on a Saturday and present them as a surprise. Now, she actually came to the company after and said, what a lovely thing you did for Chris. Yeah. He's so over the moon and there's no way I'd have let him spend the money on the sunglasses.
Yeah. But, and so that's, as a starting point, I think this is very important. You can get a lot more out of your people. You're good. It doesn't always work. And, and Janet Jackson, you know, had it right with her very famous song from the mid-80s. You remember the song? A surprise, wasn't it, eh?
Oh, yeah.
Bit of music on the podcast.
Absolutely.
What have you done for me lately? And that is the truth of it, because anything you do for people has a half-life.
Yeah.
And if it's a big thing, I mean, because the girls still talk about Beyonce now, but they won't be by this time next year.
Mm.
You know, so that was a kind of big, that had a bit of a lifespan of probably 8, 9, 12 months, probably it'll start to wane. The sunglasses again.
Yeah.
He was probably
every
good.
Every time he wore them.
But he was probably good for 6 months, but then it starts to...
Yeah.
It starts to wane.
But that's the trouble with money as well, is once you have it once, you then actually expect to get it the next time.
Yes.
And that's why actually money can be a disincentivizer, because you go, well, I've got that this month. And the trouble with money, any incentive that is external, as in someone has to do it for you, means that you have to be there for them to do it.
Yes.
And obviously the best motivator for anything along this is attitude.
Yes.
If you get the right person wanting to do that job, like the Olympics, like the voluntary type mentality, that beats any stick or carrot, hands down, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and I think in that regard, we do very well with an EC. I mean, because the reality of it is that most of our staff are not on a bonus.
Absolutely.
The salespeople tend to be the exception to this.
Yeah.
Because they are wired to chase. They're the hunters, as it were.
Yeah.
And salespeople typically are the one part of the business where, you know, you would want to tie in what they bring in to what goes out to pay them. And as I say, the questions that in Danielle's article in the March 2016 edition of the Entrepreneur Circular is well worth paying attention. Have you sent any good videos lately?
I haven't actually. No, I've sent a few emails.
Are you not a bonbon fan?
A bonbon. Bonbon, that sounds like the thing I definitely wouldn't be discussing in an airport, but no. But I do know what bonbon is, but I think you probably would explain it a lot better than I could.
I will explain what bonbon is in a moment.
The podcast is an Entrepreneur's Circle production, exclusively for EC members.
So bonbon is, it's a service, it's a software service that was introduced to me by Glenn Aykroyd and David Laycock, reigning Entrepreneurs of the Year.
Absolutely.
They run the YouMove estate agency franchise based up in Cleckheaton in West Yorkshire. And they came along, they were very excited to mastermind one day last autumn about this new thing they discovered or that they heard of called bonbon. And it is, just to be clear, that is bomb, as in the explosive.
Yes, that's
bomb.
Hence the airport analogy.
Yes. So it is. Why can't you talk about sweets at the airport, Martin? I don't understand. but bomb, as in B-O-M-B, bomb, to twice over. I had a look at their website. It's a very, very cool little piece of software. You do have to pay a monthly license fee. I think it's about $40 a month or something per user. But many of you within Entrepreneur Circle will have received bomb emails from us now, because what it does, it makes it very, very easy to record a very short video either on your mobile phone or indeed on your desktop if you've got the camera set up. We do both. And there's no need to render it or upload it. Basically, you record the hit save. It embeds it straight within your Gmail. Yeah. It works best with Gmail, I think. And you can send it. I've started to reply to, if an email, someone sends me an email and it requires a kind of lengthy reply, what I've realised is it's much easier for me just to put BombBomb on and talk them through it. Because I can talk them through it in 3 minutes and it would have taken me 10 to write the email. So it's great for that. It's much better though, and really has been developed and devised to develop relationships in the sales process.
Very much.
And our business growth support managers here are using it. You know, I would hope many of them have used it now, you know, lots of times with their members, because it starts to build, it puts faces to names.
Well, you can see what someone looks like. Absolutely. They sound like. It's lovely.
The trick is to keep them fairly short.
Yes.
Well, no one wants to watch a 5-minute video. But done well, they really can start to elevate and differentiate you, which is where Glenn and David started utilising it with all their estate agency franchisees. Because going back to either potential sellers or buyers, this gave them huge potential and massive differentiation, and everything was personalised. It's a very similar technique to the one that the local Range Rover dealership sold me my new car last year.
The See It Now.
That's right. Yeah, that's which right. was the motor. Now that wasn't BombBomb per se, but it was but exactly the same principle.
Well, that's how they got involved in it. It was because we suggested See It Now.
That's right.
They went to See It Now.
That's right.
And See It Now said we only work in the automotive sector.
Yeah.
What an own goal that was.
but the principle here of, because it was, as we've been talking about for many years now, the theme of all our big events at the ICC has been, it's all about relationships.
Yeah.
And the reality of it is, you can convey so much more in a short video, no matter who you are. You don't need to be, you know, as I prove very well day after day, you don't need to be well equipped or particularly well skilled to come across as authentic and real.
Well, that's the point. You are
that's
authentic.
What it's all about.
Absolutely.
So I thought a little nugget there for.
You just think of the places you can use it, and we've talked about it before. You know, you're at the post box and you're posting them their special package,
mm-hmm.
and you can say, "Hi, John, I'm just actually at the post box now." Putting it now.
There it goes.
You'll get it in two days' time.
It's gone.
And of course, no other company in your market, your competitors, can do anything like this.
Yeah.
So it just sets you apart from everybody else.
So it's a really, really smart thing that can help the sales process. And we should talk perhaps a little bit more about sales, because one of the things that continues to surprise me, and it comes up in Mastermind a lot, I see it here with new people coming into our organisation, is the norm in our country, it seems, is that there's little rigor or system in so many businesses' sales process.
Mm.
So much of the selling is left to kind of intuition or to chance, or it relies on the charm or the charisma or whatever. People not thinking their sales process through. We've still got members of EC who email quotes.
Yes.
Which is... It genuinely is bonkers. Why would you want to have your chance of getting the business land in their inbox?
Or may not.
Well, it can land somewhere in there, but whether they're opening
the reading... Read it or not, it could go to junk anyway.
Give away so much there, as opposed to it landing, you know, as a physical entity in a nicely packaged envelope with a lovely cover, with all the positioning around you and why people should choose you, all in there, the right quality of paper, the personal, all things you can do to really elevate you and make you stand out. But it doesn't just stop there. We've talked about follow through.
Yeah.
You've mystery shopped
some
of your clients
lately. Some of our clients recently. That was a big reveal to
a lot
of them.
And I wager a hefty sum that follow-up or lack of it will have been an issue.
It's an own goal.
You
spend so much money on trying to get the people, and then when you get them, you don't put the ball in the back of the net.
And sometimes even the business owners have designed the process adequately.
Yeah.
But it's the implementation where it falls down. And this is really the kind of topic I almost want to leave you think most about on the back of this particular broadcast today, really, will be just for you to think about your particular sales process. I know most people listen to this in the car while they're driving along. And how do you know that those leads that came in 3 weeks ago have been followed up 5 times.
Well, it's not only that, but you know, the thing that amazes me is a lot of people, maybe in the UK especially, don't believe things have to be sold. They think actually a few emails and a few direct mail pieces even, and someone's going to phone up begging to buy from them. Well, you just take the world's most prestigious and established companies. You know, for example, to sell a Rolex watch.
Mm-hmm.
Now, most people know that what a Rolex watch is from positioning.
Yes.
But to be even talk to a customer, you have to go on a 3 days Rolex sales training course in Milton Keynes, I think it is, just to be able to open the box and sell it. Apple, when they launch a new product, all through the profile and everything else, they have APPLE as their acronym for their sales process. Everybody on that shop floor goes through a strict sales methodology on how to sell. Even with their positioning and their cues and everything, they still make sure there is a sales process at the end of it.
And again, this is another example of where smaller businesses tend to fall down compared to the big players, because those systems tend not to exist. I'll be the first to admit that, you know, how much we have learned over the years and still have to some extent. You know, we're good at the marketing, but things still fall through our cracks. And I know that we're way ahead of most people in that regard. And so, because the other thing, we did it at one of the regional meetings in January, and in one of the 149 sessions, this particular question was thrown up, and we got talking about positioning.
All right.
And of course, we tried to write the kind of desired positioning for this particular business. And what came out, we did it around the tables. And it was very interesting because 5 out of the 6 tables, what they wrote was what he did.
Right.
But there was nothing about why you should buy it from him.
Him personally.
It was about what the thing did.
What the industry might do.
Yes. And so it was around the product.
All the competitors would do the same.
Absolutely. And I've got people here who've been part of EC for 3 and 4 years. They're still kind of default, because that is where, as a nation, it seems some reason, cerebrally and intuitively, that's where we default to. Yet, you know, why should someone spend their hard-earned money with you? What is it about you as opposed to all the other options and choices that they've got?
Yeah.
And that needs drilling down into your anyone that's actually talking with your customers.
Yeah, absolutely.
I had another interesting experience of this. I was at my little guilty secret, which I will rarely talk about, but it is quite embarrassing. And if Sue ever finds out, I mean, goodness knows what might happen.
Well, she won't be listening to this.
No, she knows the podcast. I'm fine. But the if I am driving anywhere early of a morning,
right,
and I go anywhere near a service station.
This is where we should stop it now and just, oh, sorry, that's the end of the podcast. See how many people, what was it?
I'm gonna disappoint you now.
Yeah.
But if it's early in the morning and I will get up out of bed early enough to allow time for this to happen, okay, because I do love a McDonald's breakfast.
Okay.
Now, please don't judge me. Please don't hate me. Okay, it's a sausage and egg McMuffin with 2 hash browns and an extra orange juice on the side.
Okay.
And that is what excites me. And we were going up to the regional meeting up in the northwest in January, and so I did leave very early so I would be able to stop. Stafford Services on the M6 going north is where they've got.
Yeah, well, no.
So I was able to pop in there, and I ordered I was very quiet, so I was very early, and there was only me at the counter. Quite unusual. And I said, I need an extra hash brown, because I'd like to have 2 hash browns. And the guy said to me, oh, I'm really sorry, he said, the hash browns, there's going to be a delay. The hash browns are just being cooked.
Okay.
I said, well, that is fine, I said. I said, but I don't know what possessed me, really. I said, but there was a much better way you could have said that. And he looked at me. I said, well, it's good news. I said, it's good news.
Fresh.
Yeah, exactly.
Just coming off.
Good news. We're just cooking the hash browns fresh for you.
Yeah.
They'll be extra hot and tasty.
Yeah.
But all those little things are they're all about the positioning, aren't they? Marie Cross does a fantastic job with the call centres that she works with, drilling in the 1%. I mean, Marie Cross is to call centres what Dave Brailsford is to cycling.
Right.
Because Marie Cross is all about the marginal gains, the little 1%. And it is all about the language. And the words, because, and it is true, that the guy at McDonald's could have said to me,
yeah.
good news,
yeah.
your hash brown's going to be with you in a couple of minutes, because they're really fresh yeah. and they'll be cooked. And it's all about that opening
steam
piece.
Steam will still be coming off them.
And thought, well, do you know what, I can almost taste
yeah,
them now.
Absolutely.
I can almost taste them yeah. now. Don't anybody grasp me up to my wife, please.
But this is the challenge of businesses, is they educate the market on why they need the products.
Yes.
But never educate the market of why it's from them.
That's right. Yeah.
And that's that. We see it in Mastermind all the time.
Yes,
we see
do.
Some beautiful copy. And I would then go online and see who sells it. But if it's very compelling to be from that company, and it's only that company,
yes.
that's the job you need to do.
Yeah, which and we talk a lot about that. We cover that, all this whole positioning piece at Mastermind. And position at Master Plan event, sorry, beg your pardon. The Million Pound Master Plan event, because the first half of the first day of that 2-day course is all about what goes on in your head.
Mm.
And a lot of this starts in people's heads because, and I think, again, it's not a peculiarly British trait, but we are very good at it in Britain, that we're good at being modest.
Yes.
And we hide our lights under bushels.
Yeah.
And whatever a bushel is. But if you find one, there'll be lights under it somewhere that people would have hidden. And of course, the money flows to the people who are out there and
very
have
much.
Positioned themselves properly. We're seeing it. I wrote an email a few weeks ago about Trump.
All right.
Now, again, we're recording this 2 or 3 weeks before you will perhaps listen to it at least, and who knows what will happen to his presidential campaign by then. But at the point at which we're recording this, he is storming ahead and is, you know, like 10 points ahead in the race to become the Republican Party nominee.
Which is incredible from his position.
Well, it is, because he was a joke candidate.
He was, wasn't he?
And, but what's, well, but
his
I think
hair got more coverage than he did, I think, originally.
Still is doing in some parts.
That's
but,
true.
But what Trump is masterful at, and this isn't a surprise to anyone who's studied him, because he's written about this in his books for 20 years, but what Trump is masterful at is positioning.
Yes.
And, I mean, I love the fact that he gets all this free airtime in America, because all the news channels can't wait to cover him. He gives them, because he does say outrageous things.
Yeah.
Now, and people, I think, because I don't think any of the stuff he's saying, I think it's all thought through. I think it's very deliberate. And as someone that's studied Trump a lot over the years, I don't think there's nothing kind of impetuous about it. The things that he's saying, whether it's about the Mexicans or the Muslims or anywhere else for that
yeah.
matter, he's thought it through. And when he says stuff, he knows it will get reported because it's newsworthy. He knows people will talk about him. And what he's banking on, and at the moment the polls are showing he's right, is that it will pull more people to him
yeah.
than it will repel.
Yeah.
Now, as business owners, that's what we want, isn't it? You know, and it's interesting, when I wrote that email about Trump, I put a PS at the bottom of it.
Yes.
And I talked about how for any, I think, what I was concerned about, because I wrote about Trump in the context of the presidential race.
Yeah.
Now, what I'll never write about is politics,
political
per
views,
se.
Yes.
And I know from that incident we had a few years ago when, at the end of a national event, where we had this most amazing talk by Ben Hunt Davis,
oh,
the
yes.
Olympic gold medalist. I was greeted by a member in reception at the NEC, and I said, "You have a good day?" He said, "Well," he said, "not really." He said, I said, "What about Ben Hunt Davis? He was great." He said, "Well, I'm not into rowing." And I guess he completely missed the point, because it wasn't about rowing. And I was concerned now that the people would think my note about Trump was about politics. So I did put the one on that. I put PS. For any superficial readers or simpletons.
That's the one, yes.
This note is not about politics. It's about marketing. And it's not about Trump. It's about you. And what I got was, I don't know, probably 20 people wrote to me on the back of that email within 24 hours, 48 hours of that email going out there. Just a little one-liner, but saying something. But it was what had triggered it, I know what had triggered it, if you mentioned it specifically, was my reference to simpletons and
yes.
superficial leaders.
Yeah.
Now, that's part of my positioning, if you like.
Yes.
You know, when I ought to do it more often.
That's what people like, is actually
that's the point.
To stand
they
for
like
something.
To stand for something or to stand against
something. Something. Yeah.
And it's the same in your market,
yeah.
whatever it is that you might be doing.
Yeah.
And if you find that and weave it into your positioning,
yeah.
then when we're selling anything, you know, at the end of the day, we've got a sales process, which we've touched on briefly. And we will have an offer, or, you know, that's part of the promotion, the way we market it. It's all part of the promotion. We've got the process, the promotion, and the third bit, and the It's where no one pays attention, is the positioning. Yeah. And when you get the positioning right, it trumps everything else. No pun intended. But it does it trumps everything else. I wish I'd used that. I wish I'd thought that through. But it's so much more important than the process or the positioning, is my point. You can be world-class at process selling, at the sales process. You can have world-class promotions. But if your positioning is rubbish, you'll still only get mediocre results.
Yeah, absolutely.
Conversely, you get the right desired positioning in your marketplace, so you are seen and understood and known by the people that matter for what it is that you want to be known as, then your processes and your promotions can, to a large extent, suck. And you'll do better.
History is littered with exceptional products failing and average products succeeding. Mm. Now, we know in the EC there are not a lot of average companies, but they may be run in a way that's positioned them to be average. And their competitors, who are probably doing it worse than they are, may be achieving more because of something else.
Yeah, and people, again, instinctively, people don't like that because it shouldn't be so.
No,
like, it's not fair.
It's not British.
Because I'm better than that. But and many a time we've had conversations with people who, you know, there are people in their marketplace, often in many industries, that the big names, the successful people, are maligned by the other players in the market because, well, it's not as good as what I do, whatever. But they are the ones to whom the money is flowing. They're the ones with that create the opportunities, that live the lifestyle, that are able to do things and impact the world. And it comes back down to their positioning. Profound stuff.
It was. I learned something the other day talking to someone. It was about the big message that you might have as a business. And basically, it got lots of people to answer this one question. And the question was along the lines of, if you think my business is X, then you are mistaken. I stand for... And it's a bigger picture. So I thought of mine. I said, if you think our business is about scaling to exit, you are wrong, mistaken. I stand for helping you choose what you do tomorrow. Now, you think that as a bigger picture thing, I want you to choose what you do tomorrow to exit your business. It's going to help you do that. Now, everybody realises you don't stand for selling your business. You stand for actually choosing what you do tomorrow. And I think a lot of people need to understand what their big message is, that they stand for or stand against.
Profound stuff.
Good.
And an appropriate point to draw this month's podcast.
That's been great.
It's been a lot of fun having you with me.
Yeah, thank you very much indeed.
The renowned author of I Don't Work Fridays, Martin Norbury, has been the guest on this month's podcast. His book is available on Amazon.
It is.
And from a couple of good retailers.
Yeah, I'm sure it is, absolutely. And I'll be back in a few months' time when the video comes out.
Martin, thanks for being with us.
Excellent.
That's the podcast for you. Nige's Notes is up next on the CD. And otherwise, we will see you in a month's time, by which point summer's almost going to be here. See you then. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the podcast from the Entrepreneur's Circle, featuring Nigel Bottrell. The podcast is copyright Entrepreneur's Circle 2015.